Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. Musician and producer Joseph Henry T-Bone Burnett is known for many things. He's collaborated with the Coen brothers on several films, including Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's also produced albums for many artists, including the Bodines, Elvis Costello, and Sarah Bareilles. And he's just released his first album in over a decade. It's called The Invisible Light, Acoustic Space. And it's not like any of his previous music. It's a fusion of trance, folk, tribal, and global. T-Bone explains the album's inspiration.
Well, The Invisible Light is from Choruses on the Rock by T.S. Eliot, which is an extraordinary beat poem and one I aspire to. And it's the way he refers to divinity. But it also comes from this notion of that this record takes place in a very dark space, but we're generating a lot of life from within that dark space. And so if you can listen into it, you hear the mirth, you hear the humor in it, and you hear the love in it, and you hear the optimism of not ignoring the dark space we're in, but actually looking at it. Because the darkness, as the book says, the darkness runs from the light.
We dream other people's dreams. Our brains are washed, but they're not clean. We dream other people's dreams.
God rest my troubled soul and give my poor heart ease.
And I'm thinking that the subtitle, Acoustic Space, comes from my fellow Canadian media visionary Marshall McLuhan, right?
That's true, yeah. McLuhan said in acoustic space, there's no center and there's no border. So everywhere you are is the center. And the thing about visual space is the space of the predator. You know, we look for the thing we want to eat, whereas acoustic space, audio space, is the space of the prey. So that if we're walking through the woods and a twig snaps behind us, we need to know that.
Yeah.
So we hear from every direction.
Yeah, and I would think that this idea of acoustic space is of special interest to you because you've said that everything you do, you try to do with a sense of place, right?
That is true, yeah. That's always been the most important thing to me. When I was a kid, there was a song called Begin the Begin. There was a beautiful record that my parents had of a song called Begin the Begin, and that song would come on and I would be transported to another land. And I thought the power of music to do that was, extraordinary, and it's something I wanted to do the rest of my life, and I now have done the rest of my life.
Yeah, which is great. Yeah, we're the beneficiaries of that. You recently gave the keynote address at South by Southwest, and while you were doing that, you spoke out against the increasing power of the big tech surveillance capitalists like Facebook and Google, and you quoted from Shoshana Zuboff's book, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. What exactly is surveillance capitalism?
Well, surveillance capitalism is a new form of capitalism. It's a new economic model where private data, private information is confiscated without the knowledge of the people from whom the data is being confiscated. And it's monetized without the understanding that the data is being monetized. And none of it is shared with the people from whom the data has been confiscated.
Right. They're basically these big companies like Facebook and Google are using us. We've become a product for them, a source of statistics and things.
Yeah, that's right. We have become the product.
Yeah. How does this idea of surveillance capitalism play out on The Invisible Light?
It plays into this whole notion of conditioned responses and this electronic programming.
I'll tell you what you want to hear, then I'll do what I want to do. I'll tell you what you want to hear, then I'll do what I want to do. I'll play upon your darkest fear. I'll be a savant for you.
We've gone through over a century of electronic programming as a race, and it's led to a whole plethora of different problems, some of which are neurological, like Alzheimer's and autism and Asperger's, those sorts of neurological disorders, but also a whole range of psychological disorders. But even beyond that, it's led to, you know, a technology that was sold to us as a way to connect us all has, in fact, disconnected us all from each other and driven us further and further into these screens. I mean, how often have you walked into a room full of people and seen them all staring at their hands? You know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. This album marks a radical shift in the sound of your music. To my ears, it has this very Orwellian kind of dystopian quality. You call the music on this album trip visualist music. What is trip visualist music? It's a great phrase.
Well, yeah, that's the phrase that came up while we were recording it. The idea that we were trip visualists as an art movement.
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
So we're starting this art movement, the trip visualist art movement.
And, great.
It has to do with, you know, we've been, a lot of this music grew out of the film scores we've been doing, especially the True Detective scores.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blending of that sort of electronic film score type approach with a very tribal, heavy rhythm vibe, you know.
Yeah, and Jay Belarosa's drums are very prominent in the mix, and there's a real cinematic quality to the album.
Right, so that's the visualist part. It's in a sense a soundtrack or a score for a film that hasn't been made.
Are you planning on making it?
Yeah, I'm collaborating with different visual artists on a number of different fronts with this music, and there are several other pieces to come later. This is just the first edition.
Yeah, there are two more editions, right?
And maybe more after
that. Oh, great.
We've already recorded two more editions.
Oh, excellent. Looking forward to those, and they'll be released, I think, 6 months apart?
That's the idea.
Yeah, looking forward to that, yeah. The second song on The Invisible Light is called A Man Without a Country.
I've always been a man without a country. I've always been a citizen of heaven. And now because the world is blue, I've only love to give to you. I've only love to give to you.
It ends with 2 minutes of very soft, very quiet ambient sound. I'm wondering, is this your tribute to John Cage, kind of a cover version of 4:33 in Cut Time, or a speed metal version?
Yeah, speed metal version,
yeah.
Of 4:33,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. No, you know, it's, I don't know what John Cage was up to with that. He certainly opened the door to this sort of thing, so in a way, I'm sure it is. It certainly comes after Cage. But it was, the idea behind it was that with all of this electronic programming, we've become victims of a very arcane behavioral modification that has shrunk our attention spans to practically nothing, you know, to 3 seconds. I think I read recently that the average attention span is under 3 seconds.
Wow.
And pop music has pandered to that, as pop music so often has pandered to the worst instincts of the audience. And what we wanted to do with this was instead to expand our own attention spans. So how long could we allow ourselves to just sink into pure sound without knowing what it was or why it was or how it came to be there, just to be able to listen? Because that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
We are, in this time, we are prey.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And in order to survive, we're going to have to learn to listen.
Getting back to this idea of sense of place, what kind of place do you imagine the invisible light happening in?
Well, it happens in a place called Itopia in our cosmology. You know, Thomas More coined the word utopia from two Greek words, eutopia, which meant a good place, and outopia, which meant no place at all. And what he was saying in the book Utopia is, here's a good place that doesn't exist. Mm. And I believe now we live in another place like that, that is, we've called Itopia because of, I suppose, the internet, you know.
Yeah, is it sorry to cut you off, T-Bone, is it called Itopia because as a kind of a critique of the digital narcissism that runs rampant in our culture?
precisely MySpace, iPhone, etc.
Yeah. You know,
an essential piece of art for everyone to view at the moment is the first episode of The Century of the Self by Adam Curtis. I think we've got it on our website now, but you can find it, and you can find it. It's on YouTube. It's on different places, but it's an extraordinary exposition on the 20th century and when the self became dominant, this idea of the self, and how the self has been taken over, has been co-opted by technicians.
Yeah. The album ends with an Itopia chant, which is very short. Can you tell me about the Itopia chant?
Well, the Itopia chant is,
we want you to know you can learn anything. We want you to know.
That's the whole Itopia chant.
And yeah.
And that's where we are now. We're in this place where we're being told we have all this information. We have all the information in the world at our fingertips. But the information that technologists want us to know is being injected into our eyes and into our brains. And we don't really, you know, we have all the information, but we have no information. We don't have the crucial information that we need to survive.
Yeah. It's a message of hope. So I'm guessing then that you're optimistic that we can conquer surveillance capitalism?
Yeah, I think we can. I think that can go away pretty quickly. In fact, we see how frequently it does go away. I mentioned MySpace a minute ago.
Yeah, that's long gone.
Yeah, and not only that, but they lost an extraordinary archive, apparently, you know.
Yeah.
And it's all ephemeral. It is, we have to remember, it is artificial intelligence, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not actual intelligence. Like when a human being reads a book, he doesn't copy the book onto his brain and just have a copy of the book in his brain. He understands the book and he learns the book and he draws knowledge from it and he draws understanding from it, but he doesn't copy it. All a machine does is copy it onto its brain, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't understand it. It doesn't intuit anything about it. So there is a real difference between human learning and what they call machine learning.
Yeah, so what is it going to take? In your mind, what do you think it's going to take to conquer surveillance capitalism?
I think it's going to take knowledge, and that's what we're up to with this series, the Invisible Light series, is spreading knowledge, disseminating the things we've learned over the last... Really, I've been studying this phenomenon for 50 years, starting with McLuhan and Jacques Ellul in the early 1960s and Neil Postman. Certainly, there are a lot. This has been a long, ongoing study for me. And Ben Bagdikian was part of it, the media monopoly, the image, whatever happened to the American dream. There's a series of books. In fact, I'm going to turn my website into a pro-humanity Drudge Report, you know, to disseminate this knowledge. There's also a book I want to recommend to you and to all your listeners that I think is the most important book of the 21st century so far. It's The Road to Unfreedom. And he goes back into really the 800s and the history of all the different European empires and the way the empires crumble and the way they tried to become nation states and how all the nation states failed.
Yeah. You've worked with the guitarist Mark Rebo many times, and we had him on the show a few months back, and he talked about the difference between protest music and resistance music. I'm curious, do you see the Invisible Light as being protest music or resistance music or something else entirely?
I don't know what it is. It's to me, it's a repository of everything I've learned. It's a place for me to put what I've learned down. I don't want to put it in a book. I don't want to write a memoir. I don't want to, you know, that's not what I do. I'm not an author. So this is the place I'm going to put it down.
Yeah, and thank you for putting it down. It's such a
My
great
pleasure.
Work. It's such a great work. You've collaborated with the Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan, on many of their films, including O Brother, Where Art Thou? And Inside Llewyn Davis, which chronicles the life of a struggling folk singer. And you've said that Inside Llewyn Davis is the story of your life. How so?
Well, Springsteen, Bruce said it was the story of his life, except he had a happy ending. But certainly, in the case of Bruce and me, there's this there's this figure that towers over all of us, you know, this Bob Dylan guy. but more than that, it's just the struggle of an artist to be able to tell the truth. Because the one thing an artist has to do is to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in this time when no one else can tell the truth.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
The media are hamstrung by advertising, and so is the church. And science has completely lost its way because of its doctrine of ethical neutrality, and because they have this doctrine of they can't make value judgments, they can't make any judgments, really. So the artists are what's left, and we're in a business that panders. The church panders to the congregation, the news people pander to the audience, and the artists have been pandering to the audience as well, telling them what they want to hear, and succumbing to this idea of that people only have 3-second attention span, so we're going to give you something else every 3 seconds to think about.
T-Bone Burnett is a producer, musician, and songwriter. His album is called The Invisible Light, Acoustic Space. You can find out more about T-Bone on our website, wpr.org/beta.
I heard from, say, the people who were early into designing things like Twitter or Facebook, that one of the reasons why those companies took a long time to understand that harassment was something they were going to have to need to deal with was because they were mostly young guys, young white guys, running those companies, starting those companies.
Up next, journalist Clive Thompson on how coders are remaking our world. I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.